Prevent the spread of coronavirus 2019 or COVID-19, social distancing and self-isolation measures have been recommended. Here are some tips for managing your mental health while working from home, in self-isolation, quarantined, having to be home due to loss of employment, or just having to be home more than usual, according to @counselingforallseasons on Instagram. Try to create a structure or routine for your day. Structure helps us feel a sense of normalcy and control, and this is especially important during a time with a lot of unknowns. Routines do not have to be about productivity. Take a nap, go for a walk, or read a book. Remember to have regular meals and hydrate. This can add to a regular routine, and both of these can contribute to mood changes. If it's possible, get outside. If it's possible, get outside or open your windows. Fresh air and natural light can be beneficial to mental health. Don't be afraid to go outside. Just make sure you're observing basic social distancing. Stick to a sleep routine. Both lack of sleep and excess sleep can increase anxiety and depression. Keep up with personal hygiene and chores. Skipping personal hygiene routines can affect our moods, so try to shower, etc., even though you're not going out. Keeping your space tidy and clean can help with mental health, but it'll also contribute to preventing the spread of COVID-19. It's two birds, one stone. Remember to connect with loved ones. We might not be able to see people face to face, but that doesn't mean that those relationships are any less meaningful or important. Connection is vital to our mental health, especially in times that can feel full of despair.
Feeling lost in the lonely, meaningless cyberweb? Looking to connect with other users? Then plug in to a CITR collective. Meet users who are compatible with your interests and passions. CITR's mainframe offers 9 unique collectives: news, arts, accessibility, sports, persons of color, indigenous, gender empowerment, LGBTQ2SIA+, and music affairs. CITR collectives are where you can make great radio, great friends, and avoid the abject loneliness of life in the cyber void.
Loneliness.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, think I'm Queen Ansem. Hydra, CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, and the Skakuya, to leave Tim, who must wear my stale.
Hi everyone, my name is Randy and you're listening to Season 6's All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm joined by my Accessibility Collective teammates, Christy, Avery, and Sarah. I hope everyone's keeping well. The team and I have a fun and rocking episode for you today. We're thrilled to have Kelowna, Okanagan's freestyle motocross rider, Bruce Cook, joining us today. You definitely want to hang around for the entire show. But before we go and chat with Bruce, let's hear the first song. Here is Sarah with our first song. Sarah?
Hi, Randy. Hi, everyone. Since we're talking about hardcore motocross, it only seems fitting to listen to some rock and roll. Our first song of the show is Pour Some Sugar on Me by the hit 80s rock band Def Leppard off the album Hysteria.
Yeah.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. The song you just heard was Pour Some Sugar on Me by the rock band Def Leppard and off the album Hysteria. Def Leppard was all the rage in the 80s and the 90s, and a huge amount of their success can be credited to their drummer, Rick Allen, who was their drummer since the early days of the band. After getting in a car crash, he overcame the amputation of his arm and continued with the band to the peak of its success. He's titled the Thunder God and is listed as number 7 on the greatest drummers of all time.
Thanks, Sarah. Now we're pleased to start our show topic, that is chatting with Kelowna's freestyle motocross rider, Bruce Cook. Bruce, welcome to CITR's All Access Pass.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're thrilled you're here, and thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Of course, anytime.
Awesome. I'll start off, and besides being known as a freestyle motocross rider, who is Bruce Cook?
That's a loaded question. Basically, I was born and raised in Kelowna, BC, and I just love it here because of the lake and the mountains and the weather and four seasons. And I've just loved any sport, but especially action sports since I was very young, and got into freestyle motocross when I was about 12 years old, kind of, and did my first professional show in 2005, and kind of been riding dirt bikes for a living ever since.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I know you mentioned it already growing up in Kelowna, but can you tell us more about what was it like growing up in Kelowna?
Yeah, so my family is all from here, my close family, so that's nice. We all live within a few minutes from each other, and it was always just enjoying what Kelowna has to offer, which is the ski hill and boating on the lake, water skiing and hiking and 4x4ing and dirt biking and mountain biking and everything. So just super active, a lot of outdoor activities. And yeah, like I said, really close with my family because they're all physically so close. Spend a bunch of time with them and friends and just like having a good time.
It's a good place for it.
Yeah, it offers a lot. So it's easy to not be bored.
Yeah, just kind of branching off your activities that you would do. How did your love for freestyle motocross come about?
So I got the first dirt bike actually in the family. Like, no one in my family really ever dirt biked. So I got a little Honda dirt bike that my parents bought when I was like 5 years old, and kind of putting around the farm. They've got some acreage here. And then that was never really anything, but it kind of sparked my cousins to get dirt bikes. And he got into racing pretty heavily, like went pro with racing. I kind of dabbled in racing a little bit, but it was too... Well, I basically like to just hit the biggest jump on the track and loop around and keep hitting it. And they didn't really like that in racing. So that's basically when freestyle motocross was being born, which is basically just hitting big jumps and doing tricks. And so that was a perfect fit for me. And that was basically when I was like 15, 16 years old that I started kind of, that the sport was even really born. It's a pretty young sport. So it was a group of guys that didn't really fit with racing and just wanted to do tricks, just basically be show offs.
Yeah, that's like when you have the one friend that's taking the same chairlift over and over to hit the jumps. You're like, you haven't even touched any of the other runs.
Yeah, that's a big part.
What was your family's reaction when you told them you wanted to be in freestyle motocross?
They definitely would have been okay with me doing something else. My dad would always joke and say, why don't you take up tennis? And the joke was always,
the same thing.
Tennis elbow could be very bad. So they were hesitant, as any loving family or friend member would be, but also supportive. They know that once I get something in my head, I'm going to do it. So they might as well get on board and figure out just the best and safest way to do it. So hesitantly supportive.
Bruce, can you explain to us what freestyle motocross is? Some of our listeners might not be familiar with it. And it's pretty dangerous, is it not?
Yeah. So like I said, it's a pretty young sport, which kind of came from racing and guys just doing little tricks. So it's on dirt bikes, generally 250 or 450 cc dirt bikes, where you go off, the standard size jump is 75 feet. So there's custom built metal ramps that you can kind of take anywhere. And that's what we tour with. And you can go to different places. So you have that ramp and then basically just a giant pile of dirt or scaffolding or whatever to land on. And you do whatever trick you can in the air. It's basically gymnastics on a dirt bike. So you're hanging off the bars and doing backflips and front flips and all types of things. So it's, it's kind of, in the name, freestyle. It's whatever you want to do. And I think that's what I and a lot of other people find really cool about it, is there's no right or wrong way to do it. If you want the jump to be smaller or bigger, or go up in the mountains and do it, or we could do it downtown on ramps, and the style of the tricks and whatever you do, it's just totally up to you. And there is judge portions for competition, but yeah, everyone's got their own unique style. And it definitely is like an art form to certain people. It's like painting a picture. No two people are going to do it the exact same way. So that's really cool.
Awesome. And how dangerous is it?
Yeah, it's arguably the most dangerous sport. You're flying 75 feet or more through the air and 30 to 40 feet high. So if you fall off or fail in any way, it usually results in a broken bone or injury. I think you'll probably find the longest list of injuries within my group of friends. When you compare it to kind of stick and ball sports, it definitely takes a lot in injuries.
You must have to have a lot of confidence, like, as you're doing it.
Yeah, I think that definitely grows with doing it. But then you find people with too much confidence are the ones that start to teeter more, because you get cocky and you don't give it enough respect. And I've seen some people, especially when they're starting, you kind of hit this place where you're like, this is awesome, I can do anything. And so they try and do anything and it bites back. And yeah, it does build confidence. You need confidence, but the right amount of confidence.
Yeah, that was a great way to put it. And I like your description of it being an art form. I'm curious, can you talk about what the training process was like to become a freestyle motocross?
Yeah, so it's even from when I started, I'm 33 years old. And like I said, I kind of started doing my first show when I was like 16. And even in that amount of time, the sport has changed so much. Like when I first started, the thought of doing a backflip on a dirt bike wasn't even a thing. No one was even thinking about it. And now if you're not doing a backflip, then it's not even freestyle. So when I started, it was kind of just building little jumps in the back with the tractor and just making a little bit bigger jump, a little bit bigger jump. And then, you know, kind of like anything, you take your feet off, you take them off a little bit more the next time, and you do it in safe little steps. Whereas now someone getting into it, there's foam pits, which are like a gymnastics foam pit that you can land upside down, not hurt yourself, except massive, like swimming pool size. And airbags, and then there's these big like inflatable landings that's basically like a bouncy castle that you can land on. So I think from when I got into it, it's these little baby steps and getting hurt a lot, because if you fail, you break something, whereas now you can land upside down and not get hurt. So yeah, someone trying to get into it now, it's definitely a lot safer with all the things that came around because of all the injuries that happened before. So yeah, it's still baby steps, but foam pits and airbags and stuff help a lot.
Wow. Thank you, Bruce. We're going to chat more in a little bit here. Stay with us, please. Now our second song break. Sarah, take it away.
Yeah. Our second song of the show is Fiva by Victoria Modesta off the album EP Counterflow.
In this moonlight, I am magnified. In this blood sky, feeling like on this live wire, it's an all night symphony inside, setting in fire from within, sweating with desire on my skin, dying to collide with you. I'm ready for another.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. The song you just heard was Fiva by Victoria Modesta and off the album Counterflow. I'm really into the electronic pop synth that she has going on there. Modesta learned to sing at a young age of 6 at a local music school and moved from Latvia to the UK when she was 12. Due to doctor's negligence at birth, Modesta was in and out of hospitals for years and had chronic issues with her left leg. She eventually had a leg amputation to improve mobility and future health. In 2015, she signed with IMG Models Worldwide, which is a really big deal. And she's known for challenging the modern perception of altered beauty.
Thank you, Sarah. All right, well, we're back and we're going to continue chatting with Kelowna's own Bruce Cook. Welcome back, Bruce.
Thank you.
Can you tell us what your most memorable moment was in freestyle motocross?
Probably one of the biggest ones would probably be, I guess, going to X Games, which X Games is basically the Olympics of extreme sports. And although I crashed and didn't really place there, it was just such a huge thing to go from a relatively small town in Canada where freestyle motocross, you know, there's only a handful of us doing it, to down in LA, kind of on the main stage at Staples Center competing. So that was definitely a huge milestone in my career.
Were you discouraged because you crashed? Was it really hard?
Obviously, it's a bummer. Like you picture what you want to do and the outcome, but it still kind of puts your name on the map and gets you out there, and you still have to be a certain level to get accepted to go. So it was, even though it was a fail, it was still a pretty big win in my eyes. So.
Oh, that's crazy. That's like top in the world sort of thing.
Yeah. And just like, yeah, crazy. I'd never even
just
like
meeting all those other people. Before.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, the event in itself is like awesome just to be like there and hanging with everyone and whatnot. So yeah, it's besides the fail part of it, it was pretty sweet.
Yeah. So I know you were saying that the sport has changed a lot since you started it, but I was just sort of wondering what piece of advice you would give to an aspiring motocross athlete to get into the sport.
Yeah. I kind of touched on it with the confidence thing. The biggest would be just don't get cocky, and everyone wants to rush and get to what they see on TV and in pictures and stuff, but kind of trust the process and just baby steps and, you know, get all the small little things down and riding skills down before you start taking hands and feet off too much. I think any kid that hops on a dirt bike is going to do the no hands and stuff, but yeah, just kind of practicing little bits at a time until you build up the confidence. And then you're pretty much bound to get injured, but I think you can skip a lot of crashes and those bad steps by hitting all the training steps and just not rushing things would probably be the biggest.
Cool. How can the sport of freestyle motocross be made more accessible to young and would-be athletes?
That's a tough one. It's expensive, especially now. Like when I started, it was, you know, just doing chores and little jobs to try and buy a kind of a crappy little dirt bike. But like now the newer dirt bikes and stuff that you need are just crazy price. And then also towns, just because of the noise and having like tracks and setups and allowing them to ride, like especially around here, it's always been a problem with them getting shut down. Probably the best way is just kind of finding that community, because like if you kind of get together with a group of people, especially with social media and stuff now, it's so much easier. But just finding that group, and usually there's someone who knows of a spot, whether it's on public land or someone owns a farm, hopefully, where you can kind of do your own thing. But yeah, I think just if you can get a group of people together, it's so much easier than trying to blaze the path by yourself.
Any tips on executing a backflip on a motorcycle without relying on leg weight and muscles?
Yeah. So I know I haven't touched on my injury and whatnot, but it was definitely different going from obviously able-bodied to then being paralyzed and doing it, because doing a backflip is so much with your legs as it is your arms. So I kind of had to relearn that. I guess able-bodied, the advice is always like try into a pool and trampoline and everything first. But yeah, it's just kind of a backflip, no matter what, is always just kind of getting over that mental thing of your body wanting to keep you upright. Like it's just not natural to be upside down. Your body wants you to be upright. So even things like somersaults and stuff, as dumb as it sounds, that feeling. And then for me on the dirt bike, it's been relying on the power of the bike and then just like transferring my weight on the dirt bike way more than I ever would have before. If I would have done it like this beforehand, I would have been doing like a double backflip. So again, yeah, it's just hitting the steps and practicing. And like, if you're able, then a pool and a trampoline is awesome. And a foam pit is definitely great too, because you can land upside down.
Okay. Next time, like after coronavirus is over, we'll all head to Kelowna and we will do a team backflip.
Learn backflips.
Yeah, for sure.
think definitely into a pool though, Sarah.
Yeah, maybe we should start with that. Yeah.
So yeah, just to keep branching off of how you've sort of accommodated to not use your legs while riding, have you had to make any sort of modifications to your bike to be more accessible when you're riding?
Yeah, so obviously dirt bikes aren't the most friendly thing for balance, but I've welded a cage basically that goes around my legs to protect them, and then one kind of on the seat that helps with balance. And then the scariest part is a seat belt, because obviously motorcycles usually don't have seat belts and you don't really want to be attached to them because you want to get away. But I have a seat belt and then kind of a bit of a roll bar for worst case scenario, which I've used a couple times and it works, so that's good. But yeah, it was kind of just like guessing when we were making it, because it's not a hugely popular thing, so we just kind of like, we had to make a few changes, but yeah, just kind of guessed. There's one of the guys that's paralyzed in the States that races, so we kind of like went on his social media and just like zoomed into pictures to try and get an idea. But like, again, everyone's got their own personal style and what feels best for them and everything. So it seems to work for me. The original design that we made 7 years ago is still what I'm going with. So.
So can we go back to, it was Hamilton, Ontario, right? And was it 2013 or 2014?
Just into 2014, January 3rd, 2014.
And can you tell the listeners exactly what happened and how you felt emotionally?
Yeah. So I was set to do a world's first double front flip on a dirt bike, as you mentioned, in Hamilton, Ontario. Quite a bit of training went into it, but the thing with this is you can only really practice it into the foam pit. It was too risky to try and practice it to dirt or the mulch pile or anything before the tour. So just repetition into the foam pit. And then come showtime, I mean, so much is different. You're a couple thousand kilometers away from where you're practicing, and the lights and crowd and everything. So yeah, so I hit the ramp and ended up under rotating. What I found out is the back of the ramp actually lifted up a little bit because you're hitting it so hard, and there wasn't enough weight on the bottom. So I ended up under rotating just a little bit. My bike basically landed vertical and I just couldn't hold on, slid off the back of the bike and essentially folded in half backwards. And that resulted in shattering my T11 vertebrae and spinal cord injury.
And you spoke, I think, in the documentary about while you were scared, you also were at peace.
Yeah, I was still alive. So that was definitely a bonus. it definitely could have gone either way. I mean, for anyone that's seen the video, it's like instantly I'm slapping my legs. So like, that's so terrifying. Like, you think you're in a nightmare when you can't feel your legs for the first time. But at the same time, I like I said, I was alive and I didn't break my neck. And I mean, I was slapping my legs, so my arms still worked. So it was kind of like this whirlwind of emotions for a while. It's days, if not weeks, if not months kind of thing. So it's, yeah, it's a lot to take in, but then you're grateful at the same time for still being alive. So it's an inner battle for a while.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, it must be tumultuous. And I guess you live near your family, so that probably helps.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And they were at the show, which I'm not sure was a good thing or not for them, but that meant that they were at the hospital pretty quick. And then like a week later, I was able to fly back to Vancouver, which is at least on the right side of the country. And then I was there for a couple months. And then, yeah, once I got home, it's just close to family and friends and just so much better.
I have two questions. Who did the modifications on your bike? Was it someone you knew or were you working with an engineer?
Yeah, so I definitely chose my friends right. One of my good buddies that's actually on tour with me is a fabricator. So he started on the bike probably like a month after my accident, if not earlier. Like, so he's already like at the shop working on it. And I'm like laying in hospital, like kind of sending him napkin diagrams and stuff. And we're going back and forth. So I basically just lucked out that one of my best friends is a fabricator and has a shop in Ontario, actually. So he made it all in London, Ontario.
Nice. How was rehab for you, like for mentally and physically getting past this event? It sounds like you were already thinking about getting back on the bike in the hospital.
Yeah. So it was actually, well, it was like instant. Whenever you get hurt, like break a wrist or something, you're always asking the doctor, how fast can I get back on the bike? And I already knew that I wanted to get back on the bike. Like while I was literally being rolled out of the arena on the stretcher, I didn't know to what capacity, but yeah, it was pretty instant. And I think that helped a lot with my recovery, just having that end goal in mind, like having something to get back to. I know a lot of people that don't have a goal can sometimes struggle because it's like everything's taken away from you. So yeah, it's hard. And I think I'm just fortunate that I had that because it was just like, you know, showing up for physio every day and just taken on every day, just getting dressed and all the stuff that's so much harder now, was a lot easier to do, mostly mentally, but also just, you know, physically. Yeah, like I said, in the gym, physio and that type of thing, just physically keeping going because you know that you need those muscles and different stuff and balance to get back on the bike. So yeah, that was a big one. But at the same time, there is bad days. It's still a terrible thing. And a lot of people think like, how did you stay positive through the whole time? And that's just what you see on social media. It's the same as everyone's, you know, it's like, you're going to have bad days, no matter who you are. So, yep, there's bad days, but it's just, again, just reminding myself that it could have been worse and have this end goal in mind the whole time.
Yeah. And with that, with your end goal too, going back to riding your bike, what motivated you to push for the backflip after your accident? And were you more determined to succeed than before?
Yeah. Good question. I guess like just backflipping the dirt bike's all part of riding, like riding is flipping kind of thing. And it definitely helped that no one had ever done it before. So it was like, I kind of failed on a world's first attempt. So it's like, that was still within reach. So why not go for that? Double down. But yeah, definitely more cautious the next time and have to take steps to really make sure that it doesn't go poorly again, because being strapped to the bike and everything. So yeah, it definitely, flipping was in my mind the whole time and motivated me that extra bit, but also had to slow down even more and you know, learn from mistakes and not rush things again and be as close to 100% sure as you can that it's going, you're gonna land it, because at some point you gotta go from the foam pit to dirt, and it went well this time.
That's incredible. We're gonna go for another song break. I hope you'll stay with us, Bruce. We're gonna go over to you now, Sarah, and what are we gonna hear for our third and last song?
Thanks, Randy and Bruce. Well, here at CITR, we pride ourselves on finding new and cool music to represent disabled artists. But every once in a while, we can't help but celebrate the artists that really made a splash in their era. I hope you guys are driving right now, because our last song of the show is Cars by Gary Numan off the album Pleasure Principle.
Sleepless of all, I can lock all my doors.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. I don't know about you, but I love feeling safe in my car. The song you just heard was Cars by Gary Numan from the album The Pleasure Principle. Gary Numan is a UK artist reaching fame in the 80s, and he pioneered the electronic music era with his use of synthesizers and guitar pedals. It was scandalous back then. He was diagnosed with Asperger's later in life, which accounted for his difficulty holding conversations and his interactions with people. In 2017, he received the Inspiration Award from the British Academy of Songwriters, Composers, and Authors.
Thank you for that, Sarah. We're back now talking to Kelowna's own Bruce Cook. Bruce, thanks again for being with us. How did you celebrate your first backflip?
It was pretty perfect. We just kind of had, well, I had all the my friends that were around with training for my double front flip, same location, everything. So it was pretty emotional. And yeah, it just happened with like five or six people around, some video cameras, but just like super backyard and like just comfortable, kind of what I'm used to. And yeah, I mean, everyone was just obviously stoked and did some pretty good celebrating that night. And, but then had like, I already had it in mind that I wanted to go back on tour. So it was kind of like awesome, like nailed this, but then there's still that like kind of daunting task ahead that I knew was going to be a couple months away also. So it's like, you kind of just want to get into it while it's still fresh, but it's like on the other hand, there's still more time to train. So it was kind of like it was a good celebration. It was amazing. But at the same time, it's like, there's still work to be done and don't celebrate too much because tour is coming up.
Right. So I'm going to guess there was quite a bit of, there must have been some fear and some apprehension. And then what was the most dominating emotion? Was it the fear side of things or was it the elation?
I mean, any sane person would realize that getting back on the thing that almost took you out probably isn't the best idea, but I knew I could. So obviously there has to be a very strong chance that you're going to make it. Yeah, apprehension for sure, because, you know, what if things went wrong again? That's all in your mind, but it's a huge mental game. Just, you know, reminding yourself that you can do it and the muscle memory and going through all the steps and just staying super positive. But at the same time, you have to have a little bit of what ifs and kind of a worst case scenario for if things go wrong and practice for that and plan for that. So yeah, it was a lot more so than before. I was thinking about those things. But at the same time, you don't want them to overtake all of your thinking so that you're thinking about failing, because then you probably will. So yeah, it's a tough mental battle for sure.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. So apart from sort of the mental battle that you were dealing with personally, how would you say that your family and friends reacted when you said you wanted to go back on the bike? Were they very encouraging of it, or were they a little bit more skeptical, especially having watched you crash the first time? Just how was their reaction to that?
Yeah, very skeptical, very apprehensive. Yeah, my parents, again, would probably be okay with me doing something else, but like my dad said, he's like, I knew when you're getting back on the bike that you're gonna flip. So yeah, friends, it was a mix of being supportive, but all, you know, should you be doing this kind of thing? So very mixed emotions. But yeah, of course, everyone's hesitant, and then those that don't get the passion, it's also easy for them to say, why don't you just stop? But you know, I think if I would have just stopped, then I would have had a lot harder time dealing with depression and that type of thing. So it's, which they realize, that's also what's getting me out of bed and all those things. So it's, yeah, it affects a lot of people that are close to you for sure.
Yeah. I feel like once you're an athlete, like such a good athlete, it's probably so hard to become like, I don't know, an accountant or something after that, you know, that's your existence.
And then there's a point where you're like, you know, it's, well, you've already done it. It's like the injuries outweigh the thought of just sitting behind the desk, and that's why you continue. So it's like, yeah, at what point?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You filmed the documentary. How was that experience, and what did you learn in the filming process?
Yeah, it was cool. So we filmed it to air on NBC at first. And a lot of it was using stuff from me growing up, the crappy footage that I had, and then crew flew up from the States and filmed a bunch of stuff. So we filmed one that was around an hour for NBC, and then they recut it afterwards to be 2 hours long because there's too much stuff to fit in, and it's now on YouTube. And it was, it was really cool experience overall. Overwhelming, because you got to dig deep and do all these interviews for like hours at a time. And it's just like, you and a few people and some cameras. So it's, you know, you're pouring your heart out to a video camera staring at you in some studio somewhere. So, but the reaction, has been amazing. And I think one of the coolest thing is it's not really a freestyle motocross documentary. So one of the most rewarding things is like people who stumbled across it on YouTube or got it sent to them by someone and they enjoyed it just as much, even though they've have zero interest in dirt bikes or extreme sports or whatever, like they enjoyed it and their takeaway was something totally different than someone who races motocross or is into extreme sports. So that was really rewarding to me, is that anyone can watch it and enjoy it, but take away totally different things. And you don't have to be an avid dirt biker to enjoy it. So, and that was all in the editors and producers' hands. Like, so they just did a really good job of that. So that was really cool.
Yeah. So we're wondering, how has your injury changed your perspective on sport and accessibility? Like, for example, after injury, I know you mentioned your accommodations. Did you look more into that and included with your sport?
Yeah, I think it's the same as anything. Until you know, you don't know. And I had no idea what spinal cord injury or anything of the sort was like. Like, I thought the worst part of being in a wheelchair is that you couldn't walk. And like, that's definitely not true. Like, it's, you don't even think of all the accessibility issues and everything. So yeah, it was a huge change and a huge realization of all the other stuff. I got really lucky that my place that I was already living in is a newer condo and it had wider doors and it was only one level. And like, bathroom was big enough. My bedroom was big enough. Like, I just, yeah, I was just lucky. So I replaced a couple things, like the stove. I got like a roll under stove top and then made like a roll under sink and everything. But yeah, it gave me a whole nother appreciation for anyone facing anything, really. It's not, definitely not just spinal cord injury. Yeah, my gratitude for a lot more things, and just realizing how much, even still, you take for granted because you just naturally do. It really opened my eyes to how much I was taking for granted before my injury. And then you just try and think about those things daily, even now, and just for how grateful you are for so many things. And yeah, it's opened my eyes to, like you said, other sports and looking at stuff and how hockey is accessible. I mean, they're doing rugby and stuff. Like, there definitely is cool options, and there's only getting more because more people are becoming aware, and social media is awesome for that and putting the word out and getting these groups together. Yeah, there's so many things that I had no idea before my injury, for sure.
Who would you say was your biggest hero, and did you meet anyone cool at the X Games?
So Travis Pastrana is a action sports legend, basically. He does motocross and rally, and he's done NASCAR and kind of everything. So I always looked up to him, even though he was only a few years older than me, watching him on X Games and everything. So that's actually technically my boss now with Nitro Circus. So that's cool. We get to hang out a bunch. At X Games, it's actually funny. So Pink, the singer, performer, whatever you want to call her, is married to Carrie Hart, and Carrie Hart came from motocross, so they're always hanging out around the events. And I hadn't met her yet, but she was coming out of the elevator, and my family was there, my niece and everything. And as soon as the elevator doors opened, my niece just ran in like full speed. She was only 3 feet tall, so you can guess at what level she was, and just like full speed into Pink. And yeah, so it was pretty funny, and met her and Carrie there. So that was cool.
That definitely is cool.
Memory. I'll remember my niece running full speed into Pink's midsection. Yeah.
I also have two questions to sort of wrap this up. I was just wondering, out of curiosity, you've talked about injury a lot. Do you know, like, off the top of your head, how many like bones you've broken or injuries you've had? Because I think I've broke like 7 bones, and I think that's a lot, but I have a feeling that you've
lost that. Yeah, I was kind of trying to count it while I had time in the hospital. And then there's always the debate with, is an injury considered each time you break a number of bones? Because usually when you crash, you break a few things. So it's like, is that one injury, or is every single bone? So if it was every single bone, I'm somewhere, I think it's like 23 or 26 or something like that. So enough. Yeah. I think I've broken, yeah, each one of my ankles 3 times and each one of my wrists 3 times. So yeah, there's 6 and 6 right there. And then just, yeah, ribs and arms and all sorts of things. So 7 though, that's pretty high.
It's
just clumsy, or
that's part of it. And then I also do cross country running, and I'm a competitor. Yeah. So they're both pretty hard sports on your body for sure. Nothing compared to motocross, but
ankles and wrists also.
Wrists, yeah. And I broke my shoulder and my arm at the same time, but that was just out of clumsiness. So
yeah, I did two wrists at once. Turns out you don't want to do that one, because there's a lot of things that you figure out you do with your hands that you don't want other people to do. Lots of learning. Yeah.
And then just for the last question here, I feel like we have to mention this, just the times that we're living in. So how has the pandemic been for you, and how have you sort of had to adapt and work around it? And yeah, how has it affected you?
A lot. This is probably the longest I haven't left the country in like over 10 years. Usually I'd probably be, I'd be like just coming home from Australia right now, because we do like New Zealand and Australia tours in the spring when it's their summer. And yeah, last year was definitely really different, but it was cool spending a bunch more time with my family, and was like home for a long period over Christmas, which is rare. So that was really nice. And then it was really good timing that last year, actually, a producer approached me about doing a show kind of about accessibility. And that is a show we shot all last summer, which is airing this year. And that was basically just like taking people with disabilities on adventures that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do. So it was like me just like coming up with contraptions in my shop to make them be able to go like jet boating. And we went zip lining and skydiving and mountain biking and all sorts of things. So I was very fortunate to be able to have that to kind of pad the blow of not touring and being stuck at home. We were able to do that because a lot of it was just with a small crew and being out in the mountains. But yeah, very different. A lot of my friends are from California and the East Coast of the US and from Australia. So I haven't seen them in a long time, as with everyone else. But again, fortunate that my family's really close. And I mean, we are all in the same bubble always. So at least they've still been close. But yeah, really weird not being on tour and everything. Like my last show was like 16 months ago or something, which is crazy. So when tour gets back, it's going to be crazy not having done a backflip or ridden my dirt bike in a year and a half. So yeah. Yeah, crazy times.
What's the future hold for Bruce Cook? And is there anything else in closing that you'd like to tell our listeners?
I'm not a big planner type guy, or kind of fly by the seat of my pants, but I think just tour as long as I can safely. There's definitely a point when your body tells you no more, and you don't want to fully reach that point. I've already pushed my luck pretty good, so yeah. I it's not just about riding either, though. It's just kind of motivating and inspiring people. And I know a lot of people get sick of those words, but it's really cool when you actually see the messages come in. And that's what's unique about social media, is that you can see the people directly, talk to them, who you're affecting, and people who are like kind of going after their dreams and stuff because they came to a show and watched whatever. So that's really cool. A bit more speaking. I've done some speaking events, kind of started doing them right before COVID. So that came to a stop. And that's something that'll be cool, that I can still travel a little bit and meet groups of people and kind of do the same thing without the risk of dying, which is a bonus. And yeah, just kind of, I mean, I love it in Kelowna. I love just hanging out and building random contraptions and having fun. And I always say that just fun and smiling and laughing is so underrated these days. If anything goes, fun gets put on the back burner and people just work and do all these things that they have to do. But I think fun is just as important as everything, for especially for mental health.
Well said. That wraps up our show for today. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate you coming out, and we're glad you're removing barriers as well as bringing awareness and education about really anything and everything is possible if you put your mind to it. And I guess, was it your great-grandfather on your dad's side that came up with the phrase, never say can't?
My dad's father, so my grandpa, yeah. And he's 92 years old, and he's out there right now with my dad and my uncle, and they're pounding fence posts. So yeah, all day yesterday he was raking and cutting down trees, and he's just, yeah, it's just that mind frame, the never say can't, and basically comes from where there's a will, there's a way. So it's pounded into my head deep.
Awesome. Thank you again. And we wish you the very, very best in the future.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
If you are interested in joining our team or think there's an issue we should bring up on our show, please send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Once again, thank you, Bruce, and thank you to the Accessibility Collective team.
Please like our All Access Pass Facebook page.
If you're on Twitter or Instagram or both, please follow us at @access_CITR.
If you missed part of our live show today and want to listen again, or maybe you want to listen to our past shows, you can do so on CITR.ca by going on the search box and typing in All Access Pass.
Take care and stay safe. Stick around for more CITR programming coming up next. Bye, everyone.
It's great. It's too much for a cultural backwater like Vancouver. It just bursts with violence. It's got every absurdity and nihilism of the world.
CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Vancouver. Every absurdity and nihilism of the world since 1937.
It'll play off-Broadway. I can see it now.
They come from the unknown, and they're here now.
Thank you. reason I can't fight. There must be a reason for me to feel this way. One that I can't hide.
I'm Sarah from Alien Boys, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Idea that I wrote. I've been too obsessed with the fight and the people I went up in smoke. Never think, never plan, never plot what I'm doing. Gotta be who I am for a stop. What I'm doing, I'm a prodigy. Honest, I gotta be something great. Never stopping, I promise I got a lot of on play. It's a prophecy, I believe them. Never gonna shake, and it's fate that I'm raising stakes. Lottery, lottery, baby, number one pick. Those who doubted me, I'll be throwing all these fists. I be giving them conniptions, blowing them a kiss. They can kiss my ass, could they bite my disc? I be feeling overwhelmed, feeling like I got a couple tells. They can spot me strutting from a mile out. I be rapping so hard, blow a light out. I be rapping so much, lose inspiration. Still write a couple songs for the dedication. They be saying that I'm always writing that greatness. Wait up, cause I never really found my patience. I be pushing pedal to the metal since the first tape. All the bars throw back like it's Thursday. All the bars throw back like it's Thursday. Had to say it two times so you heard me. I've been working, never really found what I wanted, so searching. And I'm too nice when they got them all lurking. So don't like what you see to see it in person. I be getting too ahead of myself. Never doing things that I said of myself. Never doing things that are better my health. And I let them all tell, but I never call help. Cause I do it myself and I leave them all so jaded. Never been one to get cross faded. I get my name in these papers, but still I'm saying it's the same when I go. Yeah, never looking far back on what I wrote. Yeah, yeah, still all these things that I don't know. Yeah, 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 yeah.
R-A-V. Hey, you told me I was too cocky. Said that my light would never last. Now hold this Ryuzaki. Drop your guard, now just drop a tsunami. I'll drop you, then I'll drop the mic at the drop of a bonnet. Then move my hand across the horizon and spark promise. Twist, pop, block it, a drop. Hot topic. Soon as your fans hear me, your stocks plummet. I pop off and you duck. I'm paying Glock's homage. Go ahead, make light of me, man. We'll see what's up. I fight until I win so much I think I'm sleeping luck. Despite my grievances, I strive to light my demons up. A leading light, I light the fuse and watch my fucking fears combust. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let 'em up, light 'em up. Write a lot about a song, I'm an animal. Write what I want, write a run till I've had enough. Never looking back like a vagabond. I'll make your grip tight, no.